So I feel like I'm taking a step back because we've all talked about interventions, and I'm really going back to sort of, in this country, the consistent need to prove stress, PTSD, depression is actually an issue. As you know, JAMA just published violence issue in August, and one of the conclusions of a study was that screening and referral is actually not helpful. So I feel like if I lived in Cuba, maybe I'd be a step ahead, but we still have to prove this in this country. So this data is really about proving yet again what many people have actually proven many times. So as background, HIV positive and at-risk women report really high rates of trauma, and we know that recent trauma is associated with increased mortality. We've seen that in WISE, we've done that with a marginal structural model, and it's really clear to us that there's an independent association between violence, exposure, and trauma, and it's unrelated to being clubbed over the head. There's some other mechanism at play here. So women exposed to trauma of equal severity are more likely to develop PTSD than men. So there's definitely a gender difference in the development of PTSD as well, even given the same severity of trauma exposure. And PTSD, we know, is associated with risk behaviors, poor health, quality of life, functional decline, depression. These things are all correlated. These are grouped behaviors as well, substance abuse, smoking, treatment non-adherence. What we don't have is, or what is available but we need to approve, is that a non-clinician, a screening tool that has good psychometric properties can actually be used in the clinical setting and has good diagnostic utility. So our study objectives for this analysis were really to determine in our cohort the prevalence and predictors of probable PTSD among a cohort of HIV positive and risk matched women. So we have a seronegative cohort as well. And to examine the effect of PTSD on select outcomes that we collect in our study. So we looked at treatment non-adherence, we looked at HIV disease progression among our seropositive women, we looked at comorbidities, specifically hypertension and diabetes, uncontrolled hypertension and diabetes, and then also mortality. So here's a conceptual model that we sort of is clearly what many people have written about over time, but that we're using and applying in the study. So the blue arrows really represent what we've already looked at, and the red are arrows that we're intending to look at next. So clearly, traumatic life events, gender-based violence, both childhood sexual abuse as well as recent abuse and an HIV diagnosis are traumatic events that can cause PTSD. And then we're looking both at not just proximal outcomes, but also the distal outcome of mortality. And then later on, we'll look at the stress, or next, we'll look at the stress response mediators, which many people have talked about, perceived stress, depression, substance use, mental health treatment, household burden and support, sleep quality, and some of the actual hormonal mediators of the relationship between trauma exposure, PTSD, and all of these distal and proximal outcomes. So the study design for this was to nest a study of PTSD within the WISE cohort. So the WISE cohort is one of the largest U.S. is the largest ongoing U.S. cohort of women with HIV and a seronegative matched group of women who are seen semi-annually since actually 1994. So this assessment is taking place in at visit 29 that coincides with 2008-2009. So really, I should have designed this as a sort of resilience, a look at resilience, because what we really have after 17 years of a cohort is a survival cohort, and not, so most of our women who were most likely to have PTSD have already been dead at this point at visit 29. But I'm thinking about that as I was sitting here. So we looked at 1,700 women, 1,200 were HIV positive, about 500 negative. The abuse exposure obviously preceded the assessment of PTSD. And then we had about, at this point, we have about 2.5 years of follow-up since the PTSD assessment. So we used the same tool Mary discussed, the PCLC, which is a 17-item symptom questionnaire looking at the three required cluster symptoms for making a PTSD diagnosis, so re-experiencing, avoidance numbing, and hyperarousal. So we used the civilian tool, which is not anchored to a specific trauma. So we use that because the trauma exposure in this cohort is A, very high, and the traumatic events are multiple traumatic events. So to anchor the symptoms to a specific event would be really difficult for this cohort. So we defined probable PTSD a little bit differently than Mary did. Mary used a cutoff of 50. We used a cutoff of 44 as a total score because the diagnostic utility of a 44 cutoff was found to be very high in substance abusing women in the U.S. So that made sense. But what we added was a very rigorous three-part probable PTSD diagnosis, where not only did you need to have the symptom severity, but you needed to also have the required diagnostic clusters present at the right level, which was moderately or more. And then, as you can see, you really need to have at least one re-experiencing, three avoidance or numbing criteria, and two hyperarousal. That's what we use to diagnose, to actually identify cases of PTSD. And the psychometric properties in our cohort was actually very good, so it's a 0.86 alpha, which is very consistent with the psychometric properties of this tool in other cohorts. So the study measures we use, we have violence exposure data for the entire time and actually historically prior to entry into the study. We operationalized three distinct violence exposure variables. One was childhood sexual abuse alone. We looked at any prior history of abuse, excluding childhood abuse, and then because recent abuse obviously is critical in terms of PTSD as well as outcomes, we looked at exposure in the last 18 months. So we looked at those independently. All the substance use variables were included, all the covariates, social, demographic, behavior, and clinical. And we were able to do this because we have such a large cohort. So we're able to control for many, many of these variables. Unlike if we had a much smaller cohort, we would not be able to control for as many confounders. Our outcomes of interest were treatment non-adherence. So again, that was, as Marge said, any report of adherence below the level of 95%, which is really required for complete viral suppression. So then we looked at HIV disease progression indicators, which included viral load slope of change, and then also CD4 slope change, and then all-cause mortality confirmed by death certificates. So abuse exposure in this cohort is very high. As you can see, we have 88% of women have reported a history of abuse, which is actually higher than anything we've heard so far. So in this country, U.S. women at risk for HIV and infected, 88% have reported a lifetime exposure to trauma. And among those women, 22% report childhood sexual abuse. And then excluding childhood sexual abuse, the remaining 66%, you can see that's broken down as 17% sexual, 55% physical, and then the remaining is domestic threat or coercion. And then recent abuse, and this again is a group of women who've been followed and in a cohort study for 17, 18 years now. Still, in the last 18 months, 10% report ongoing recent abuse, 3% sexual, 6% physical, and then 6% domestic. So there's overlap, obviously, in some of these. So this chart shows just participant characteristics by PTSD status, really basically the univariate results. So serostatus does not predict PTSD. Race does not predict PTSD. To some people, that actually is a surprise, but is not the case for us. It really is these other indicators of inequities. So lack of education, lack of income, housing instability, study site. You don't know what the study sites are there, but you know the worst is if you live in LA, you're most likely to have PTSD. We think that actually has something to do with country of nativity. So the LA cohort has a very high number of women born in Mexico, and there's some confounding we couldn't actually control for here. Hazardous drinking, smoking, drug use, sort of again these risk grouped risk behaviors. Here you can see depression, quality of life, perceived stress, not surprising to us. The correlation coefficients of these three with PTSD is very high, all above 0.6. Diabetes was not, hypertension was not, diabetes was, hospitalizations, transactional sex, increased number of male partners. Interestingly, we wanted to look at hormone therapy. I mean, these numbers are low in terms of hormone therapy, but there is a correlation with PTSD here as well. In HIV-positive women, non-adherence actually wasn't in the univariate model. There was no significant effect of viral load or CD4. So again, it's 11% PTSD in this cohort. The range of this PCLC is 44 to 85. We have a median here is 56. So a pretty high score. The three symptom clusters were equally represented, so we didn't see any difference there. Again, no difference by serostatus and this high correlation between other predictors. Then when we did a multivariate logistic regression, looking for independent predictors, really controlling for a number of factors that were significant in the univariate model, you can see we looked at all women, and then we stratified by serostatus. So again, childhood sexual abuse, any recent abuse, being unemployed, being on hormone therapy, smoking, hazardous drinking, recent hospitalizations, all independently predictive, even when you control for age and all the other factors, substance abuse in the model. Interestingly, when we stratified by serostatus, there were differences by serostatus in with respect to what was predictive of PTSD, and you can see those here. Again, the seronegative group, only 500, but still a pretty decent size. But childhood sexual abuse, any recent abuse, was more predictive of PTSD in our seropositives than our seronegatives. And you know, we have things like marijuana maybe potentially being helpful in our seronegative group and preventing or actually sort of maybe handling some of the symptomatology related to PTSD. And in terms of the hormone therapy, in many instances, or what we're thinking about there is that estrogen, this sort of gender difference in the effect of estrogen on anxiety symptoms, and that women who have anxiety symptoms who then go through the menopausal transition may actually be more likely to be prescribed hormone therapy. So this is replacement therapy. So this correlation here with hormone therapy may reflect some of that. Then we looked at the association of PTSD with outcomes. And when we look at the group of all women, we're looking at missed visits and mortality. And we're looking at missed visits in terms of our research, because that's all we really have data on, as a proxy for engagement in care. So you can see that the odds of PTSD being associated with missed visits is great among all women, as is mortality. Even in adjusted models, you still see this impact on missed visits or odds of missing a visit related to PTSD. When we look at, and then also in mortality as well, I mean, even though the effect is much smaller, it still exists. So considering this is only a 2.5-year period post-assessment, we think that's, you know, something worth exploring. And then in HIV-positive women, really no effect in terms of CD4, but an effect in terms of viral load slope. So, you know, whether PTSD, there's some data that PTSD itself has a direct effect on viral replication, potentially through some hormonal mechanisms. And then there's also, obviously, if non-adherence is associated with PTSD, we really need to take into account non-adherence, because non-adherence certainly is associated with viral load. So we need to do those mediation models to figure, sort of tease out whether it is actually direct effect or mediated through non-adherence. So in conclusion, women in our study, you can see, had exceptionally high rates of trauma exposure, and 10% experienced recent abuse, with 11% with a probable PTSD diagnosis. you know, given the high rate of trauma exposure, again, I'm thinking we should really be looking at the reverse. You know, those women who've been exposed to trauma who actually don't have PTSD and what the factors of resilience are. So, you know, I'm thinking we really need to reverse how we look at our existing cohort and learn from our resilient women what predicts, or as Mary said, social support, some of these other mediators that can prevent PTSD, and maybe capitalize on that knowledge to use that knowledge to design interventions that can really reduce PTSD among those exposed to trauma. Obviously, more importantly, to reduce trauma would be the goal to begin with, not to just figure out how to treat or prevent PTSD. And I did mention, you know, this high death loss and loss to follow-up. So, you know, at this point in the cohort, visit 29, 48% of our cohort has already died. So if we were assessing PTSD at baseline, I'm certain that the PTSD prevalence would be substantially higher. And if, you know, mortality and loss to follow-up are associated with PTSD, certainly we have a very underestimate of our PTSD prevalence here. Implications we talked about. Again, I think figuring out, obviously on a very, very big level, how to reduce trauma and really move toward a no tolerance approach to violence in communities and families is critical. But given that trauma exposure is absolutely occurring, figuring out how we can identify women who have been exposed to trauma and then to treat and refer them to culturally appropriate, successful, you know, tailored interventions that really work is, I think, going to be the important next step, a big one, but, you know, in our clinical setting, if we're saying we don't even need to really be assessing trauma and we don't need to be referring because those things don't work, you know, that to me is a step back. I mean, simple screenings to assess for trauma exposure and finding and getting women to places where they can be successfully treated. And certainly in this country, if people can do it in Rwanda and Ethiopia, we should be able to figure out how to do that here, is critically needed.